This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. What do I mean about misconceptions? They're the stories you tell yourself about why couples therapy just isn't for you or won't help or is a waste of time. And those reasons also serve as a great way to avoid the fear of vulnerability that is part of the therapy process. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Hello to all of you. I said last week that we were going to focus on HSP or highly sensitive people this week, and I've received a couple of comments and questions from you. I'd love to receive more, and it was spring break for many, many people here in the U.S. last week. So I thought I'd ask again. If you identify yourself as highly sensitive, what kind of issues or problems has that brought for you? How do you handle that fact in your own relationships? Or what questions do you have? The email from last week was from a listener who said she's trying to figure out her own responsibility, meaning how does she know if her being highly sensitive is creating a problem or whether what's going on around her is truly insensitive? And here's a preview of my answer, and it's a great question. And I think the answer is that yes, it's a factor, but no, it's not her fault at all. So I'd love to hear more from you at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com in an email or leave me a SpeakPipe voicemail message. And that you can find in the show notes or on my website at drmargaretrutherford.com. So what are we going to do this week? We're going to be talking about couples therapy and what misconceptions people have about it that will keep them out of trying it. The listener email is one that I will not read to you, but it made me want to share a couple of my thoughts about why I do this podcast, why I invite you to write to me, and what I hope you take from it, and what I hope you don't. Today, we're hearing from our sponsor at AG1. I take AG1 every morning, have for the last 3 or 4 years. They've been a sponsor because it makes me feel better. And they've got a special offer for Self-Work listeners. If you're a longtime listener, you might know I've been drinking AG1 for at least 4 years. When I started drinking AG1 daily, I could feel such a difference in my stamina. And when I would forget it on trips, which they have travel packs, so there's no excuse, I'm very aware of that lack of stamina. I recommend AG1 to my family and friends, and even my husband, who usually swears off things like this, has started drinking AG1. And he always tells me, as do my friends who are drinking it, that they feel like they're getting the nutrients their body craves. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs, like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. So get your free 1-year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/selfwork. That's drinkag1.com/selfwork. I promise you, you're going to feel better. I do a lot of couples therapy, and there are 9 words that are music to my ears. Quote, "We came in before there was a real problem," unquote. This very wise couple hasn't waited until a crisis has hit. No one is flirting with a coworker. No vicious and repetitive arguments are overheard late at night, nor does steely silence define their days when the only words spoken are about who's getting which kid to which practice. That's called stonewalling, by the way, and people do it all the time, not realizing its danger. It's very disdainful to refuse to talk, and your children see it, remember. If only it were the norm for couples to come in before things get chaotic and incredibly hurtful. I happened to see a YouTube video as I was researching this, and its title was, Couples Therapy Doesn't Work. Here's my thought about that. Firefighters who are called to a blaze way after they should have been aren't going to put out those fires very easily. Let's face it, you probably don't take your car in for a tune-up until some warning light goes on. Tornado shelters are planned and built after tornadoes have ripped through a community. Do you know where your flashlight is or if it needs batteries? Probably not. We're all inundated with the stress of normal life, working for a promotion, attacking piles of laundry, or helping with math homework. So it's easy to forgo maintenance of your relationship, to reassure yourself that the arguments you're having or the fact that you can go days without speaking to one another is okay. Add on to the fact that there are some very common misconceptions about therapy itself, which make it much more likely that you'll never darken the door of a couple's therapist, and you can wait far too long. So today, we're going to talk about those misconceptions that you hold on to and you don't consider couples work. Now, what my premise is they could easily be hiding just what is plain old fear. What do I mean about misconceptions? They're the stories you tell yourself about why couples therapy just isn't for you or won't help or is a waste of time. And those reasons also serve, as I said before, as a great way to avoid the fear of vulnerability that is part of the therapy process. So I'd like to debunk six of those common misperceptions. Here's number one. Therapy involves giving up control. Some stranger isn't going to tell me what to do. You tell yourself that therapy is like school and that the therapist is the authority with all the answers and you, the ignorant student, are assigned tasks which you must perform. You're handing over your life to a perfect stranger. I assure you, if I used such authoritarian tactics, I wouldn't have any patience. What a good therapist does hopefully have is objectivity and experience. They basically act as a consultant, seeing problems you're describing in the context of the hundreds of other couples they've seen. It's the backdrop of their understanding. They also may connect present-day issues with your past or notice behavior or communication patterns that are harder for you to see. Just today, I was seeing a couple for the first time, and I noticed how often he looked at her as she was talking and how she just looked at me. The energy was going from him to her, but not back from her to him. Very interesting. It's the same as a coach watching your golf swing or a chef tasting food you've prepared. Basically, you're not giving up control. You're asking for another perspective. You're asking for a consult. Here's misconception number two. I can talk to my friends. My father-in-law used to joke, "People pay to talk to you?" In many ways, his teasing revealed an important point. There's a misconception that therapy is all about talk, words. It's not. Therapy is about a specific kind of relationship that, yes, has a focus on you and what you want to change in your life. Your therapist's job is to carefully understand and then hold your emotions, your hurt, your anger, and help you work through them. For couples, the work for a therapist becomes to provide that compassion and support for both, even though there can be vast disagreement and conflict. And if you notice, your partner is actually watching the therapist have compassion for you, and then your partner is watching the same. So you can imagine, wait a minute, I just diss her when she says that, or I just don't pay attention to him when he complains about that. And here the therapist is paying attention and acting like it's important. Hopefully you can see that there's a lot of affirmation in that. And let's talk about friends again. Your friends have an agenda. They've never thought this relationship was good for you, or they don't believe in divorce, and so they're going to make sure you don't get divorced. Friends have an agenda. Hopefully a therapist does not, except to help you and your partner reach a better place with one another. Whether you decide to stay together or split up. And hopefully what a therapist can do is whatever your decision, that can help you make that choice, or that can help you follow through with those actions in a way that's most beneficial for the two of you and your family. Here comes misconception number three, excuses of money, time, and availability. And I quote, "Therapy costs too much, it takes too much time, and you can't find a therapist when you need one anyway." Money is tight for many, and of course, it's a consideration. But I will say to you, divorces are very expensive as well. So maybe it's better on the front end to invest in a little therapy before you decide nothing can help. And in fact, therapy can be very focused on a certain issue or pattern, and if you do the work outside of the quote-unquote therapy hour, then you'd be amazed at the kind of progress you can make quite quickly. Many therapists use a brief, solution-focused model and will work with you on identifying a major issue and suggest things to both of you to work on in yourselves. How fast therapy goes is actually up to you. Now, as far as availability goes, there are some areas in the U.S. where therapists are scarce, and I know that in other countries I've heard, such as the United Kingdom, there are long waits for therapy that's free, largely due to demand. But online therapies are growing in popularity and are definitely an option. And the self-help community of podcasts like Self-Work, books, tapes, seminars is huge. If you look, you'll find something that will help. Here's misconception number four, distrust. I don't want anyone to know my or our business. How could some stranger know anything about me? Now, there's no getting around this one. At its root is a struggle with fear, shame, and immense distrust. If you're $50,000 in debt, if you've got an addiction, if you were abused as a child, if you meticulously clean your house at 3 a.m., those things are important for a therapist to know if they're going to be able to help. And it's hard to talk about it. Often your distrust is rooted in the fact that you've been hurt and you don't want to be hurt again. So obviously giving information to a therapist, although this is someone that you hopefully have grown to trust, it can really trigger some things that are really hard for you. And I get that. There's a lot of vulnerability in therapy. It takes a lot of courage to risk. And remember, your partner is watching you do this and watching you learn how to trust and watching you take risks. And you're doing the same with them. So your own sense of trust can increase because you're leaving the session and your spouse looks at you and says, "I never realized that what happened in your family when you grew up was having an impact on us now. And I'm so sorry that I have not been attentive to that or even aware of it." There's some very interesting things that happen in therapy when you see your partner, the person you've been mad at, the person who's made you cry, the person that may have been very disdainful to you, or the person that you think you've ignored, for you to actually work with them and see the therapist work with them can cause all kinds of light bulbs to go off if you allow it. Now, you can also make that contentious, which we'll talk about a bit later. Misconception number five. My partner doesn't need to know everything. Many people keep secrets, and yet secrets have power, a lot of power. You may not have wanted to disclose these things for fear of their impact, and I get it. Hearing yourself say the words, and especially admitting something in front of your partner, can be very hard. But if your marriage is crumbling, maybe it's time to consider another strategy for connection, one that is built on more openness and honesty, and that can start in couples therapy. For example, I worked with a gay couple one time who'd been together quite a long period of time. They were not married, but one of them had had an emotional affair. And what came out was that was in the context of her fear of growing older and being actually a significant amount of years older than her partner. Now, that may not make much sense to you, but basically she had watched her own parents' marriage fall apart as they got older. And so in some way she was playing out some stuff from her past. Now, that does not mean that we needed to dismiss the idea that she'd allowed herself to be attracted to someone else. That's not the point I'm trying to make. What I'm trying to say to you is that sometimes when you can have compassion for why or how your partner has made the mistake that they have, that you can have more compassion. You have to work out the hurt. You have to work on trust again. If you're the person who had the affair, you have to answer your partner's questions. And you have to work very hard, but understanding the context can be very, very important. And that can only happen if you do couples therapy. This brings up the last misconception. Is individual therapy or couples therapy better when your marriage or partnership is in trouble? The misconception? Individual therapy is better than couples work and more successful. Let me share with you this fact that's been well researched. Individuals who are in individual therapy are far more likely to get divorced when their marriage is a huge reason they're seeking help. Let me say that again. Individuals who seek individual therapy are far more likely to get divorced when their marriage is a huge reason they're seeking help. Why? Think about it for a second. Let's say you go to an individual therapist. They listen to you, affirm often how you feel or that you have a reason to feel the way you do. Now, a good therapist may not tell you you're right, but in simply listening compassionately, they're giving you something that your spouse or partner probably hasn't done in a long time. And you're there to talk about how unhappy you are or lonely you are in your marriage. And here's another issue. What if you're keeping your feelings for someone else a secret, or keeping anything important or damaging a secret? Your therapist can't read your mind. Now, again, this is individual therapy. Maybe you tell them about the secret, maybe you don't. But if you do, they'll need to give you a heads up that secrets are powerful, and keeping one from your partner, whether or not they sense or know it, does damage. I had someone come into therapy years ago who was actively having an affair, but he said that it wasn't doing damage because his spouse didn't know anything about it. I found a way to gently confront that, although he didn't like hearing those words from me. So basically what I'm trying to say is when you go into individual therapy and you're talking about your marriage, but you're not being honest about some things that are yours, then the advice you get or the counseling you get may be skewed in a way that it would never be in couples work or if there are no secrets. Now, therapists will at times see both individuals and then do couples work as well simultaneously, meaning they'll see you, your partner, and then you and your partner in couples work. I've done that not too often, but I have done it. And what I've learned is most of the time it backfires. Why? Because of secrets. Because I, as therapist to both people, can't hear a secret. And I certainly can't keep one from the other partner. And so the dynamic is created that the person really needing to talk about and work through their feelings about this secret, they don't have an outlet. They can feel abandoned, lost. They're in therapy, but they can't really talk honestly with their therapist. So it can be a real mess. And I don't do both individual and couples work simultaneously anymore. It's just not what's best in my opinion. Now, you can also have too many therapists wandering around in your life. They may have very different ways of looking at things, so that can be confusing. You can sign a contract allowing one therapist to talk with the other. But again, you can see immediately that if one of you has a secret, then that's not going to happen. You're not going to sign. As I said, secrets have immense power, whether it's a gambling debt, lying about something, or having another bank account or phone. Sure, you can be afraid to tell your partner, and the telling of a secret may end the relationship. There are no guarantees. But I'll say that I've heard many a time, if you just told me, we could have faced it together. That doesn't always mean the partnership survives, but it can. I myself have done couples work, meaning that I was the patient, and it's much harder in many ways than individual because your dynamic with each other is complicated and based on so many factors. In fact, here are recommendations I make especially to couples who are on the brink of divorce. Number one, agree not to mention divorce for a certain agreed upon length of time. 3 weeks, 3 months, whatever. Here's number two. Do your own work to make yourself feel like you're a better person and a better partner. Don't gauge what you do or say by what the other one is saying or doing, meaning you take responsibility for yourself. You're doing the work because you want to feel like you're a better person and a better partner. Number three, no one talks to your kids alone. If you decide to share, you're in counseling, fine, but no blame, no, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for your father or mother. That may feel good for a second, but it'll put your kids in the middle big time. And fourth, don't use therapy against the other person. You said in therapy you were going to do X, Y, or Z, and you didn't do it. Or you said you were going to try not to say this, and look at you, you're saying it again. You can come in and talk about that in therapy. I've often had people say, what you see in therapy is not really what it's like at home because we're on our best behavior in therapy. But I promise you, if some of what I see in a therapy session is someone's best behavior, then I understand why they have a problem. So basically, in couples work, you want to claim what your part of the problem has been and work on it. Again, because your own self-esteem will increase, and maybe, just maybe, if both of you do that, your marriage will not only be salvaged, but be better for it. It's not easy work at all, but I've seen many people do it and be damn glad they did. So today's email from a listener isn't one that I can read. In fact, the listener who sent it to me was very adamant I not answer her through email. She was one of the listeners whose message I'd addressed here on self-work, and she hated what I had to say and told me I'd done damage to her in my answer. She said she hoped that I wouldn't be able to forget her anger and resentment, and in some ways I have not. I knew and know now that when people write to me or send a voicemail, it can feel very risky, very vulnerable. And I try to make sure that my answer or response conveys that I appreciate that risk. And as I tell my own clients frequently, I'll tell you what I hear or think, but that doesn't mean I'm right. In fact, with us only contacting one another through a very brief window of either a voicemail or an email, I'm only hearing bits and pieces of a situation, and that can make it more risky. Certainly, this listener isn't the first person within the last decade or more of me writing and podcasting online and inviting people to respond. They're not the first person that has let me know I've not given them the answer they needed or that what I wrote or said was just plain wrong in their eyes. I've had Google reviews that were scathing and accused me of all kinds of things. With all that said, I keep doing this. I keep hosting self-work. I keep blogging. And I will say this. The vast majority of you have let me know that my words are heard and appreciated and that I have gained your trust. That means the world to me. I also can hear that for this listener, my words did just the opposite, and I'm sorry for that. I will continue to try earning everyone who listens trust. I know that your time is very valuable, and the fact that you spend it here on self-work means a lot to me. But as someone in a recent online review of self-work said, thank you, Dr. Margaret, and to all the listeners who have shared their stories and questions, which make this podcast especially special. And it does. Your questions, your comments make it special. And I'm very grateful for that. I'd love for you to share this message or podcast with someone who might benefit from it. Maybe your friend is considering divorce or therapy, couples work. This might be very helpful to them. As always, I appreciate your presence here. Please take good care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.